This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
Another part of my being was, I am the cat who walks by himself and all places are alike to me.
Except you have to be careful of snakes. Have to be really careful in the bush.
The running joke was, look for me when you see me.
And this year, I'm looking very consciously at that and looking at maybe...
And then I went to New York City for a weekend and stayed 10 years.
After a couple of months, I did get stir crazy.
Being okay with the cat who walks by herself and being a person who just doesn't need people like our society teaches you, you need people.
Does our society teach us we need people? Maybe the people we need, definitely we need employees, or no, maybe we don't. Some temps, maybe. We need consumers, or maybe we could outsource consumers. This is Hitchhiking Off the Map, and I'm Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller from our liberal, eco-spiritual think tank in Sebastopol, California.
Oh, for a think tank. With stories about journeys, metaphorical journeys, literal journeys, the trips you took where you did not come back the same, if that ever happened to you.
I just paid a big bill for the plumbing man to clean out our think tank. Or today's story where it's somebody else's journey from which maybe you don't come back the same.
Yeah. How do you relate to somebody else's journey? Now, this story is about an experience that does not make headlines in this day and age, but most people still regard it as pretty strange. When you see a person you know very well, and suddenly the face is different, or maybe the face is the same, but the person inside is different.
And it's not always for the worse, you know. I remember the amazing experience that I had in re-encountering a person whose roommate I had briefly been and was at that point profoundly unable to cope with living with this person. And here was this centered, wonderful, glowing, energetic, really cool person. And I thought, wow.
Some people actually become human as they get older, yes. Yeah, I know who you mean, yes. So.
Our story.
Another part of my being was, I am the cat who walks by himself. And very much the cat who walks by herself.
By herself.
Looking
herself,
at maybe being okay herself, with the cat who walks by herself.
By herself, by herself, by herself, by herself.
Terry Connolly told me about her father, and I said, well, let's do an interview. I'd expected it was going to be pretty short. It was a nice, neat piece. So I just said, well, to orient, could we just take a 2-minute tour bus through your life? And she started talking.
I was born in Birmingham. My father had been, I thought, honorably discharged, turned out dishonorably discharged for homosexuality, which I never knew any of that in my childhood. But he met my mother, who somehow had wound up from being in New York back into Alabama with her family. She was an artist. She started painting when she was very, very young. In high school, painted amazing things. They were very open people and fascinating people. Anyway, Mom wound up in Alabama, met my father. The two of them got married. The first minister wouldn't marry him because they hadn't known each other long enough. And as my parents used to say, what he knew that we didn't know. They were like fire and water. They wound up in Rome, Georgia, where he also was a DJ. The story, as I remember, was that he was almost lynched because he supported black rights. We wound up in L.A. My father worked in a radio station in Whittier, and there begins my real memories. My mother, like I said, was a painter. She was a fine painter. And Ais Nin was a friend and would do beginnings to her shows. Dad always working in radio. He worked in Disneyland Hotel for a while. I actually got tired of going to Disneyland. My mother, when I would come home from school, would be asleep. She would get up at night and she would paint. She was a very sick woman, but she was also a very intelligent, beautiful. She, at this time, was in AA. I remember being in Alabama, going for the one visit when I was 5, and we were going to dinner, and there was a restaurant that said AA on it, AAA, and I turned around to her and I said, "Mom, look, it's an AA meeting." And she bapped me on the back of my head so hard it made my ears ring, and she said, "You never say anything like that in front of your grandparents." And my father, he was a wise, wonderful man. He was also a very sick, dysfunctional person. Wonderful memories I have of him, of a Thanksgiving where a family had, I remember us going to the door with a great big turkey and all the fixings, and my father taking my hand, guiding me through a rickety gate, and it was an old whitewashed house somewhere in L.A., and going to the door, and I was expecting that my father was going to say, "Here, we brought you this turkey." And we opened the door, and my father said, "Hi, somebody gave me $5 to deliver this to a," and came up with the name. And it was a little child who opened the old, creaking, rickety screen door, and he called his mom, and his mom came and got it. And as we were leaving, I brought my dad's head down to me. I said, "Dad, why didn't you tell her we brought it?" And he said, "Japanese saving face is when you give that person a chance to accept a gift without having them have to go through the humbleness and the emotions."
They moved to Carmel. She went to high school and got into theater, the world of artists, met a guy, married at 18, had a baby.
My parents had very strong political beliefs, very strong Democrats. I was told I could marry anyone as long as he wasn't a Republican, which unfortunately I did do and was a mistake.
And living the life of unsettled young marrieds.
On my wedding day, though, I knew it was wrong. I knew this was not the right thing to be doing. Dad had gone off to Oregon to take a radio station deal, and Mom was staying, and I think I just was knowing I needed to escape, I needed to get out. And not having had a lot of male relations, in high school being very much into the arts and, you know, having flirtations, wanting to, but never knowing what to do about it. When my daughter was delivered, little old lady in a wheelchair, and she saw us coming out, and I thought, "Oh, she's going to say, what a cute baby." And she said, "You kids are too young. You are much too young." And many, many times thinking on her and going, "Oh, God, did she know what she was talking about?"
And they lived in a series of different places. Her husband went back to college and theater. Her parents divorced. Her daughter got older, and life went on.
I get this picture of Dorothy going along the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick road. You know, having that. I used to sing all sorts of songs to get me through my life. And that, you know, going back to my childhood, carrying through. For years, I would fall into some Broadway tune. Follow the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick road. I knew them all.
For a while, they were with a theater troupe. Then her husband got a job with a newspaper. She had a second daughter. Things got tense. Some attractions, some frustrations, some nice times. It's a pretty common story.
And I was the dutiful country wife, which suited me just beautifully. I wrote poems at this time and had this wonderful old shackled house where one bedroom had a hole in the floor and had a great big window, wood stove. The window looked out on a field with an old oak tree. I remember the first snow I ever was conscious of. Waking up, we slept in the living room because it was too cold not to. And waking up and seeing the whole world white. And there was Serena and Heather and me and Richard. But things were not right. But I could still pretend they were right enough.
Until the day...
Until the day my husband came home and told me that my father had called him up and my father had said that he was changing his sex.
And that was the story that Terry had started out to tell. She told it to other people, and I thought we could make it a nice little feature, although, damn, some other program just did a sex change story. And then she talked for the next 2 hours about the context. Some of that wants to stay private. No, we don't need to know everything there is to know. But just touching the highlights of her long journey into the present.
I am the cat who walks by himself.
And very much the cat who walks by herself. Looking at maybe being okay with the cat who walks by herself.
He said, I think you need to come sit down. And I sat down at our old round table that had red legs that I had made a Star of David on the top with old wood. And he told me it was about my father, so then, of course, I became concerned. And I was afraid he was going to tell me my father was going to die. And he said, your father called me today at work at the newspaper office, and he told me, there's no way, easy way to tell you, that he was going to change his sex. He may have said that he was a woman, which I didn't understand. And then he said that he's going to change his sex. And then I just remember the feeling of being relieved. Relieved he wasn't dying, that there wasn't more serious things happening. So from there, it went to, even in thinking, there's a moment of absolute blanking out on it. My relation with Richard got stranger and stranger. When we told his family made it sound like a joke, and I joined in the joke because I didn't know what else to do. Serena's reaction to Robin was wonderful. Her reaction was, oh, goody, I get to wear her wigs, and I get to, and is she happy? Is she okay? It was so wonderful. When we sat down and told her, it was the reaction that I think I would have had of just acceptance. There was no strangeness in it for her. And that kind of grounded me. It really helped me seeing that. But Richard wouldn't let me tell her for the longest time. And I had no support from my husband. My mother was too fragile. She was, you know, oh, that Bob always did have to do something to get attention. But mostly she was just her neurotic, helpless self.
To clarify, Bob, her father, became Robin.
So Robin had given me these mugs that said Robin, Shoestring Advertising, with his face on it. And just shortly before that, Robin had had her nose done. And Robin always told me all the things that were happening to her, which I really didn't want to hear. I did not want to hear how my father, who I adored, and the nose that I adored, that bulbous, wonderful nose, was being changed to something else. I didn't want to hear. And I certainly didn't want to be shown as she wanted to show me her private parts and what that looked like. And, you know, she had large shoulders. My father was a pretty large man. He had large Irish bones. He was not feminine looking. At the time, you know, just as we say she, he, I say she, he, so easily, that didn't come easily. It was, what do you call him? Is this my father? Is this Robin? And I, of course, being who I was at the time, would make a point of saying she and calling her Robin. And what it has evolved for me is that when I speak of my father, I speak of he and him and Bob. And when I speak of Robin, I speak of Robin. So there is a dual reality there, and that is real. And that's something that I don't think is understandable unless you live it. But I wanted my father's continued love. I loved him so much. He was so much my life, and I am so much his child. And I see myself in him constantly, or him in me. My father was living in Pengrove, and we were having a fairly close relationship. I loved being with him. I loved talking with him, and even as I'm talking, I hear that it's him at this point, even though it really was Robin and she. And Robin told me the information that my father had molested me as a child and that I had memories of that. He was she, Robin, was glad to be letting go of the guilt of that, that she had, when I was just an infant, and there had been times, because I remember touching under a dress when I was probably less than five, probably periods when my mom was still drinking before AA. And my father told me those things, and I remembered those things, and naturally I had feelings with those things. And when my husband, the person you're supposed to trust, came home, I told him about those things and was upset, could have used some comforting. And my husband got very angry, and that's when he told me that he felt cheated, that he always knew there were things wrong with me sexually, and that's why I couldn't give him what he wanted, and that I was sick and disgusting and just like my parents. And now he understood it. And so, of course, my response to that was pretty much to lose it, and I don't know how it all evolved from that.
Things crashed. She broke all those mugs with her father's picture. She lost her marriage, her house, then her job, and one child who chose to stay with the father. Not the happiest outcome.
But you know, from the moment I left Richard, I felt so much better in my life. I was scared. I was terrified. I was scared of the logistics of living, but oh God, I was alive for the first time. Yeah, it was never wrong. It was always right. I was terrified, but it was always right. And so Heather and I were in this little cabin type thing, and we had fun. I remember just smiling a lot and crying some, mostly because I was scared and I, you know, was losing jobs and I was not a functional human being by any means. But I remember cuddling up together. I remember laughing.
And she reconnected with her father. I asked, what was your relation to him then?
Well, you know, by this time, for the first time, I actually could get annoyed with her. She was a guru. She was always so wise. And she was. There's no doubt about it. Her politics were excellent. But she always was pushing at me. She'd stand there sometimes, and when some event would happen that was, Serena was acting up, or something was not calm. And I look for calm in my life, too. She would bring her hands above her and do a Tai Chi, bringing the energy down, which is a good thing to do. And I am taking Qigong, and I believe in all of it. But it still felt to me like a criticism. I wanted my dad. I wanted my daddy to put my head on his shoulder. I wanted normalcy. You know, it's funny, as a child growing up, and still as an adult, there was the conscious thought, not only of the cat who walked by himself, but of wanting normalcy, wanting not to be special. My cousin asked me once when we were in a museum, and she was trying to be very flamboyant, and, you know, we were teenagers and trying to be very 60s. She said something about wanting to be very special in her life. And I said, oh, I just want to be normal. I just want to be like everybody else. And she couldn't understand that at all. And I understood it perfectly even then. You know, to go to a shopping mart, and look at a woman's dress and not think my father would have liked that, you know, would be really nice. My father passed away. So did my mother. Robin got cancer. And Robin called to tell me, she was in Oregon, and she and Kathleen were living together still. After all that working out, they still chose to live together in a very, most people find that hard to believe, and I suppose it is, but there was no sexual relationship to it. They were just friends and support for each other. Called to tell me she had cancer. And then Robin, and this is so typical of her, said she didn't want me to come up because she was going through physical changes. She didn't want me to see her. And she also had a lot of the cat who walked by himself. And then at the very, very end, she called for me to come, and I couldn't. So Robin had her ashes sent to me to scatter at the river. And I was glad. And when I opened those ashes, it's amazing. And there are bits of bone in it, which are amazing. It's gray. It has bits of pink in it from the bone, bits of matter. It was so heavy. And I didn't expect it to be heavy. But it was heavy. And it had substance, and it mattered, and it existed. I went to the river. I looked for a spot on the river. That's my home, and that's where I want to be scattered. It's my heart. But I scattered, and when I scattered the ashes, they flew up into the sky for a moment and became iridescent. And it was wonderful. I knew Robin was free, and I knew that we all of our family, Mom, Dad, me, all believe in reincarnation strongly, always have. Death is not really an issue for us, never has been. But the reality and the grieving that goes on with it is a different thing. Mom died, a few years after, maybe one or two. And that actually, I think, probably had a few more repercussions for me than Robin's death, because there was so much less settled there. But I held on to her lashes for years, for 5 years. Amazing. I let her go about 5 years after, holding on to the ashes, and actually made more ceremony of it than I had made with my father, and set down the seagulls were there, fed them some bread, was very aware that I was doing something illegal, and waited for the tide to roll in, and then put her ashes, and her ashes didn't go out to sea. They flew back at me. So there you are, you know. I am the cat who walks by himself. And very much the cat who walks by herself. By yourself, looking at maybe being okay with the cat who walks by herself.
So is the story about sex change? Or survival? It's a lot more complicated or rich than what we've selected here, and that's true of my story, your story, any story. Or is it just about doing what comes next?
There began to be in me this need to learn, to experience, to reach out, to apply all the things that I'd learned that I'd been giving to theater in supplying characters. I now began to give to myself. My children were growing up. They were taking on their own. They no longer needed me. In fact, they were teenage. They were actively pushing me away. So I began taking on my life. I finally got that job with Rebecca at the Montessori here on Pleasant Hill. And that was a family. That was the we of me. I was now getting a sense of what it was like to be treated well, to be enriched and fed. And it's easy to meditate and have those moments alone. My moments alone are very lovely, mostly. I can be me very nicely. It's when you're with other people that it's difficult. And that's where the cat comes in again. I'm a grandma. I work with children. I'm also thinking that I really enjoy my life alone and that I need to stop worrying about it, basically, and just be me. And looking at my children, I hope both my children can remember the good times and let go of the other stuff. And we get together now, and it's okay. We can be a family. We got together this Christmas, actually twice. Once at Heather's, which was delightful. And Richard was there. And then at Serena's, and that was lovely, and Richard was there. I've been teaching in this job. I have security in this job. I'm with people who support me, loving people. I'm with children every day who need me, who hug me. If they can't hug me, they let me know I'm appreciated. So life is such an evolution, and we're evolving.
In Sebastopol, we were talking with Terry Connolly.
And a special message. If you like this show, we would like to ask a favor. We've been on the air now for nearly a year, which is amazing. on 5 stations in Northern California and 1 up in British Columbia. And we're just now starting to work on finding other stations to carry the show. We need your response.
We've had wonderful responses, but we need a lot of response.
A lot. Do you like the show? What do you like about it? We need even just a few words from a lot of people to let program directors out there in Kansas know what you think about it when they're thinking, should I squeeze this strange thing into a crowded schedule?
You can email us, i@independenteye.org, or if you don't have email, then write to us, The Independent Eye, 502 Pleasant Hill Road, Sebastopol, California, 95472.
Your words can help bring these shows to a lot more people. So if you like this stuff, please take a few minutes, write Independent Eye, 502 Pleasant Hill Road, Sebastopol, California, 95472, or email i@independenteye.org right away.
So that's our trips for this week. Hitchhiking Off the Map is produced by The Independent Eye, with funding from the National Endowment for the Arts and the California Arts Council, and from the Hitchhikers Guild. Next up, a visit to our archives for 2 of our favorite features. Tune in and be surprised. This is Elizabeth Fuller.
And Conrad Bishop. Peace, my friends, and joy.
My father was amazing. He was, and in later years, liked to think of himself as a guru, which in later years annoyed me no end. But he was. He had a lot of wisdom, a lot of gentleness. Another time when I got on a horse and I was scared, and so he jumped behind me. And we were riding along and I was talking to him and I was getting over my fear, and suddenly I looked back and he wasn't there. And he just said, "Hey, you're doing it by yourself." And I'm immensely grateful to him for that.